Today's Washing Tech episode is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at washingtech.com/book. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And also Warby Parker. Get a free 5-day home try-on at warbyparkertrial.com/joe. 5 pairs, 5 days, and the try-on is 100% free. That's warbyparkertrial.com/joe.
No matter how much the players are smiling, if you take a black player and a white player with a similar smile, the black player is assigned a more negative emotion.
Welcome to the Washing Tech Policy Podcast. We deliver the latest tech policy news and brightest tech policy experts to you.
Wherever you are, so you can stay productive, relevant, and informed in less time.
From Washington, D.C., it's the Washing Tech Policy Podcast with Joe Miller.
The D.C. Circuit rejects the FCC's request to pause net neutrality oral arguments. The EU hits Google with a multi-million dollar GDPR fine, and Lauren Rue is my guest. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals rejected the FCC's request to postpone oral arguments in a lawsuit 22 state attorneys general and advocacy groups brought against the agency for arbitrarily overturning the net neutrality rules. The FCC made the request due to what it claims is a lapse in funding caused by the government shutdown. Oral arguments are scheduled for February 1st. The EU, via the French data regulator, CNIL, has hit Google with a fine of 50 million euros for what it says is a lack of transparency, inadequate information, and lack of valid consent regarding ads personalization. That translates to $57 million US. The agency says the opt-in documents users consent to are confusing and don't allow users to give specific consent in each instance in which their data are being used. The Justice Department has launched a criminal investigation into China-based Huawei Technologies for allegedly stealing trade secrets from its business partners in the U.S. The Wall Street Journal notes that Huawei is the world's largest maker of telecommunications equipment and second largest manufacturer of smartphones. Huawei founder Rong Zhanfei last week denied claims that Huawei spies on U.S. companies on behalf of the Chinese government. Rong's oldest daughter, Meng Wanzhou, who is Huawei's finance chief, is in the process of being extradited from Canada to the U.S. to face allegations that she worked to evade trade sanctions on Iran. And last week, some members of Congress introduced bipartisan legislation that would ban the export of U.S.-made components to China-based companies like Huawei and also ZTE that allegedly violate export laws. Finally, Sprint has announced that it will stop selling location data. The announcement comes on the heels of a Motherboard article claiming that major carriers sold location data to bounty hunters, which Motherboard investigative reporters were able to obtain with little effort or expense. AT&T and T-Mobile have also claimed that they will stop selling location data. On the legislative front, Florida Senator Marco Rubio introduced a bill last week that focuses more on regulating tech and social media companies rather than the telecom companies. And it takes a lot of power to enact privacy rules away from the Federal Trade Commission. You can find links to all of these stories in the show notes and also on our Twitter feed. And our handle is at Washing Tech. Stay with us. Washing Tech Policy Podcast listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. You can listen at the gym, in the car, or on your morning run. How about Click Here to Kill Everybody, Security and Survival in a Hyper-Connected World by Bruce Schneier. You can download Click Here to Kill Everybody free by trying audible.com. Sign up for your free audiobook and 30-day trial today at washingtech.com/book.
Tech policy is global policy. This is the Washing Tech Policy Podcast, serving the world.
My guest today is Lauren Rue. She's an assistant professor of information systems and analytics at Wake Forest School of Business, where she's also an Exxon Wayne Callaway Rising Faculty Fellow. Her research uses empirical and econometric methods to explore the economic and social implications of technology. Dr. Rue is also interested in investigating the economic implications of technology platforms for traditionally disadvantaged populations. She earned her bachelor's in management science and engineering from Stanford and her PhD in information systems from NYU's Stern School of Business. Please welcome Lauren Rue. Lauren, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
So you released a paper recently entitled Racial Influence on Automated Perceptions. Simone Brown joined me back on episode 125 to talk about her book on the surveillance of blackness. But for those who are coming to this issue cold, give us sort of a historical perspective here, Lauren, and a sense of the trends we're talking about when it comes to facial recognition.
So as Brown discussed, surveillance is just increasingly seamlessly woven into society. This system is both omnipresent and somewhat invisible. So people aren't realizing that they're dropping these traces of data and that they're giving away these choices when they share pictures on Instagram, when they search with Google, when they shop on Amazon. And so we're seeing cameras being just ubiquitous, especially in these urban environments. And so when you think about that in terms of facial recognition specifically, not just data that we drop, facial recognition is used to analyze available data, merge it with other digital traces. In 2011, Carnegie Mellon researchers noted facial recognition can be used to connect to social media, which can then connect to social security numbers. It's really this just pervasive system, and it's important because you can't opt out. I mean, you only have one face. Your face is publicly available, so as you move through your daily life, others can see you, and yet you can't change this identifier, of course, because it is, in fact, your face. And so that's one of the challenges. And we see that this is concerning, of course, from a surveillance perspective, from a safety perspective. But there isn't really a push to decrease this use of technology because it's so convenient. It can increase accuracy. It can increase profitability. So it makes sense that companies are using this affect recognition or facial recognition for emotions in their interview software because it's a convenient way to sift through these number of candidates, right? So many people are hiring. You're trying to be innovative. You're trying to come up with new ways of using technology. But we don't understand some of the biases, right? And the same thing with threat assessment. And so you have these consulting firms are developing facial recognition to identify who's a threat based off of their latent mental cues. And we don't know if it's more accurate, but we do know it's more convenient. And so that can be one of the big challenges is that facial recognition has this push for convenience, for accuracy to be embedded more deeply into our daily lives. But we already know that it's subject to bias. I mean, facial recognition has been subject, along with other types of AI, has been subject to bias. An MIT study last year showed that facial recognition of gender is less accurate for people of darker skin. We know that sync sensors are less accurate for people with darker skin. And so my study is really following along in this vein to understand how facial recognition, particularly facial recognition for emotion, differs by racial groups.
So tell us a little bit about the empirical analysis that you did and what you found.
So this project started because I'd been working with facial recognition for other projects, and I'd noticed that there were systematic differences in how the faces were scored. Previous research had already shown that there are other differences with AI, so I thought, you know, there could be something here. There could still be racial biases in facial recognition for emotions. So I compared a set of 400 NBA player photos, and the reason why of the photos that I had, I chose those pictures is that the players are very similar in terms of their clothing, their athleticism, their age, their gender, their professional portraits. They're all looking at the camera. So you wouldn't expect to see the same types of differences that you might see if you looked at, let's say, crowdfunding photos or photos of people shopping. People are going through a lot of different things, but these are professional photos. And so I found overall Black players were assigned more negative emotion. The first, of course, pushback is what if this difference is legitimate, right? What if Black players made angrier faces and that's why they were assigned angrier emotions? But to control for that, I used this matching technique that creates this quasi-experimental condition. But essentially, I matched the players based off of how much they were smiling. And what I find is that no matter how much the players are smiling, if you take a Black player and a white player with a similar smile, the Black player is assigned a more negative emotion. So either anger or contempt. And so right now my study is currently limited to men, but I'm looking at women as well. And anecdotally speaking, I did another analysis and I find similar evidence of similar discrepancies that Black women are assigned as angrier than white women.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm expanding that.
Yeah, I mean, that's been going on for a while, but now we see kind of the data behind it. So what are the implications here for developers, for policymakers, for society at large? Can you give us kind of a sense for what you're seeing in terms of how scholars and advocates are working to challenge some of these things?
Well, one thing that's heartening is that there's this increasing awareness that we have to consider these issues and make these changes. So among developers, there's this awareness, there's a need to account for skin color, to account for racial differences. I mentioned earlier about sensors and sinks. And that's one example of how if you don't have darker skinned people developing these sensors, you don't realize, oh, this sensor doesn't see Black people, doesn't see darker skin. And so in the context of facial recognition, these biases can come in because of the deep learning algorithms that need labels, right? So there has to be a human somewhere that says, oh, this is what happy looks like. This is what sad looks like. And if you don't have people of all backgrounds in the room, adding those labels, telling the machine what happy looks like, what sad looks like, we can see these types of biases in the output. And so tech companies are responsible for this, and they're starting to think more about this. So Microsoft is one company that's leading the way. They're actually calling for the regulation of facial recognition.
I saw that,
Yeah, and so without this regulation, companies are going to incorporate more facial recognition. They're going to sell it to the highest bidder, or they're going to be penalized by the market. And so it's really market pressures are just not going to be sufficient to ensure this type of fairness and ethical practices. So as far as policymakers, I mean, there's another research group, AI Now, which is one of the biggest advocates in this space. And they just came out with a 2008 report that highlights some of these potential challenges to widespread facial recognition.
That's the NYU program, right?
Yep, absolutely. So as facial recognition is moving into all of these arenas, we really need to identify when companies can use it, how they're using it. And we need to understand if the system is flagging Black men as angrier and then targeting them as threats. And unfortunately, though, when it comes to the recommendation for society or for individuals, all we have is the advice to smile more, which, right, you know, is a ridiculous suggestion in 2019.
Yeah.
But honestly, that's all that we really have ownership over. So in that sense, this is a collective problem. We have to put pressure on regulators. We have to have top-down pressure because we as individuals can't necessarily do much about the system.
Well, thanks for that, because I can't tell you how many times I've been told, and particularly when I was younger, that I needed to, quote-unquote, smile more. It's like, what? Just these times that I'm not feeling angry at all and just feeling totally content and being told that I need to smile more, whatever. So it's nice to know it wasn't in my head. So we're going to take a quick break here.
Well, and then, you know, a lot of us have had those moments.
Yeah. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll do your icebreaker, get some career insights, and find out what you're reading these days. Okay, so it's time for the icebreaker. You ready?
Let's do it.
Okay, if you had a talk show, who would your first three guests be?
So my first guest would be Nikki Giovanni. As a child, I just loved her poetry. I read them all the time, and I would say, in a sense, her poems defined my childhood. And I actually met her once in college, and I was so excited that I was tongue-tied and may have been embarrassing. So I'd love a take two. And then Trevor Noah is another person, just because I laughed so hard that I cried during his book, Born to Be a Crime, and yet he managed to tackle these really difficult topics. And so I'd love to know how can he do that, tackle these very deep topics in such a lighthearted manner. And the last one I would say would be Oprah. I mean, she just occupies this unique place. She seems so down to earth that she campaigned for Stacey Adams. So I would love to know, too, from a business perspective, how did she have the foresight to manage those negotiations and turn her journalism into an empire?
How do you stay productive and successful? And what are some of your tactics for getting stuff done?
So first of all, I love the assumption that I am productive. I always feel like there's more to do. And maybe that's the life of an academic. But for me, I find it easier to do these types of deep dives into projects. So I tend to work with a single-minded focus on 1 to 2 days just to move a project along. I've been given the advice that you can chip away 1 to 2 hours each day, but that just doesn't work for me. I have too high startup costs.
So what are you reading these days?
So I'm reading a few things, but I think the book that's most impactful right now is Click Here to Kill Everybody, a book by Bruce Schneier about internet security. One interesting element of our current internet is that it wasn't designed for the type of hyperconnection that we have with the Internet of Things and your refrigerator's tweeting. And so there's all sorts of policy recommendations for how you can think of internet security and what we need to do to ensure the safety of our data. And as someone who cares deeply about data and data privacy, I think that it's a very interesting book.
I didn't know that refrigerators were tweeting, so I'm definitely not getting that refrigerator. Well, thanks again, Lauren, for joining me. What are some takeaways you'd like to leave with us, and where can we find you online?
So I think the biggest takeaway is that once facial recognition and these other forms of AI are embedded in our systems, it will be difficult to account for bias after the fact. So just like internet security, we don't want to be chasing behind the innovations. We should get out in front of it. So I would ask people to be active, put pressure on local representatives to understand and to regulate facial recognition. You can reach me at RHUELA at WFU.edu.
And you've been listening to Lauren Rue, Assistant Professor of Information Systems and Analytics at Wake Forest, and the author and principal researcher of Racial Influence on Automated Perceptions of Emotions. Lauren, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
That concludes episode 170 of our podcast. Thanks so much for listening. If you like what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Please take a moment to head over to Apple Podcasts. Give it a review. It helps others know what they can expect from the show and really helps us out. Thanks for listening. I will see you back here next week. Take care.